Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. April 15th is the tax deadline. It's months away, but there are still some things you'll want to be aware of that may save you some money, but it will require action before the end of the year. Joining us with those tips is Lance Weiss, CPA and partner with the tax and accounting firm SFW Partners, LLC. Lance, we can't go on meeting like this every year at this time. And again in April, we get together. Good to see you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back. And, you know, it's not April 15th once again. It's April 17th this year.
So I stand corrected.
Yeah, we get until the Tuesday. So the 15th will fall on a Sunday. But then Monday is a holiday in Washington, D.C. So, of course, the IRS is closed.
Sure.
And then we all have until Tuesday the 17th.
Two more days to get ourselves in order. Lance, we can't start a program like this without talking about what's been going on in Washington. And the reason I want to bring it up now is there are a lot of people out there who apparently think that the tax reform measure just passed and signed is going to have an impact on this tax year. Ivanka Trump has even been touting the fact that people are going to be so happy with how much more money they're going to be getting. Of course, she's wrong on that.
Well, largely wrong, because many of the changes don't come into play until the January 1 of 2018, or when most provisions come into play. Now, the IRS tables for withholding will be slightly adjusted to account for the slightly lower rates. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple of items that go back to the 2017 year. For example, if we look at a draft form right now of the Schedule A for the itemized deductions, you can only deduct medical expenses if they exceed 10% of your adjusted gross income. Well, that changed about 2 or 3 hours ago when the bill was signed, and now it's back down to 7.5% of adjusted gross income. That's not enough to take the vacation that Ivanka was talking about. But so there are some changes that need to be reflected on the forms that do have an impact for 2017.
Are there any things that you can suggest that people could do now to be better prepared for this next tax code?
Well, you know, so the bill has been talked about in a whole bunch of different forms. It's been talked about as a middle-class tax cut. No, it's not. It's a wealthy tax cut. And we could go on and on about all the different words there. But how I look at the bill is that it really is – it's a business owner's tax cut more so than anything else. Mm-hmm. And if you're the family making $100,000 on a W-2, on a couple of W-2s, whatever it might be, with a couple of kids, your taxes will be lower. The child credit's bigger. The withholding will be smaller. The tax rates are a little bit lower. But if you're a business owner and your family owns a business making $100,000, there are some significant changes that come into play. And the biggest one being is in 2018, you're only going to pay tax on $80,000 of that $100,000 you made. Mm-hmm. There's a brand new 20% right off the top deduction for those business owners.
But there's nothing people should be doing now in 2017.
You know, there's no one piece of advice that fits everybody. Mm-hmm. So one of the other big changes from 17 to 18 is that the standard deduction will go for a married person from roughly $12,000 to up to $24,000, which means a lot of people won't be itemizing deductions in 2018 just because your state tax, your property tax deduction is limited to $10,000. Most people don't have a big mortgage, and their mortgage rate's only 3 or 4%. Mm-hmm. So maybe that adds another $4,000 or $6,000. But even with $10,000 of state income tax plus the $6,000 of mortgage, we're still $8,000 away from being able to itemize on a married return. So what we're encouraging a lot of people to do, if they have the cash flow to do it and they're charitably inclined, is to utilize something called a donor-advised fund. Then you don't have to be a multimillionaire to set up and use a donor-advised fund. Vanguard.com has these. Fidelity.com has these. Your own broker, wealth manager probably has access to one of these. And what it allows you to do is make a charitable donation here in calendar 2017 when for sure you're going to benefit from the deduction because mm-hmm. you're itemizing, and then put it in that fund, take the deduction now, and then in 2018 it can go out to those charities. And if we're not going to itemize anyway, we might as well try to double up on our charitable deductions in 2017. So it's that whole theory of, can I bunch my deductions? Mm-hmm. If you have a state estimated tax payment and it's due January 15th of 2018, because that's when the fourth quarter payments are due, pay that now. Pay that, you know, before the 31st so that we can write that off on last year's return.
You can do that with almost anything that you're paying for. Home mortgages, for instance.
Yeah, you want to be sure that anything that you would normally pay in January, let's get that in the year that we know we're going to be able to deduct it.
Yeah. What you talk about itemizing your tax return and the standard. Who should be using what?
Well, it all comes down to the dollar threshold.
Yeah.
And in 2017, that standard deduction is somewhere just a little bit over $12,000. I don't have the number in front of me, 12.2 or 12.4, somewhere on there for a married couple. And if the sum of your state income taxes, your personal property taxes, your real estate taxes, your mortgage interest, your charitable deductions, if you have any miscellaneous itemized type deductions, if they be broker management fees or unreimbursed job expenses. So total all those up, and it's just a math contest. Whichever number is higher, take that. And if the standard deduction is higher, take that. If the itemized deduction is higher, obviously do that one.
What kind of investment decisions should people be making now?
You know, and that advice doesn't really change because of the new law, because there really weren't any changes that hit the top of my head right now with regard to the investments. If you're in a 0 or 10 or 15% tax bracket, then your qualified dividends and your capital gain rate is 0 in 17, and it's still 0 in 18. So with those decisions, you want to get a look at where your investment statements are year to date. Now, this is the week, I guess actually starting last week and a little bit through the end of the year, where the mutual funds will declare their annual dividends, and they'll pass those gains out to their unit holders or shareholders or mutual fund holders, whatever the different titles are. And some of those are big this year because the market was obviously up quite a bit. So I think a lot of people will be surprised by how large some of their taxable gains are coming from their mutual funds. So it's a good time if you can get a hold of your broker and your money manager, or even look online and see what your gains are in these funds. And to the extent you have some funds or some stocks that have losses into them, if the economics are such that it doesn't look like it'll go up much in the next 31 days, then sell it. And maybe you can buy it back then after that. But it's called that tax loss harvesting. And we're not in the business of managing money. So again, I would encourage everyone to sit down with their financial advisor and see, is there anything here that we can sell that would reduce our income for 17?
Is there any kind of advice at this time of year for people of lesser means? And I don't mean poor people necessarily, but you know, we speak of people with some wealth and people who are just average, average people. What can they do?
Well, you know, make sure you're taking advantage of every opportunity that your employer might have to either match some retirement savings account, or even perhaps if you're eligible for the savers credit that the IRS offers, where you get additional dollars paid in on your behalf if your income is low enough and you contribute to an IRA. So, you know, those are the sorts of things you might look at. There's also a very large portion of the population that's eligible for at least some portion of that earned income credit. It would be worthwhile to pull out those tables and see, where does my income fall there, and is there anything I can do? Because in many cases, you want to increase some income to increase that payment.
I want to talk more about that earned income credit, and we will in a moment. But first, let me advise people, if they want to get into this conversation, give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or send us a tweet at STL on air. We're talking with Lance Weiss, and we're asking him for tax tips at the end of the year that can help save us a few bucks come April 17th, the tax date for 2018. Okay, explain the earned income tax credit for me.
Well, so first of all, it's not an area that I'm going to claim to be the national expert on. So, but in general, the way it works is, if your income falls into a range where you have income, you have earned income, and you have dependents, then there's a table that says, if your income is this number and you have this many kids, then you're eligible for an additional refund, even though you hadn't paid in that money. Mm-hmm. So it's an encouragement for someone to get out and instead of earning zero, hey, if I can go out and earn, you know, $6,000, $8,000, $10,000, $15,000, there's a table that runs through the math, then not only will you earn that money, but we will also supplement that earned income with this tax credit and increase your refund.
Mm-hmm. Another term that comes up year after year that many people do not understand is the alternative minimum. You knew I was going to get there sooner or later.
Yes, the dreaded AMT monster, yeah, or alternative minimum tax, which I've been saying for years is horribly misnamed. It should be called, instead of alternative minimum, the required maximum tax. Mm-hmm. Because it's a second separate tax calculation, and if it's greater, you have to pay that instead of the regular tax. Now, the AMT tax will again rear its ugly head in 2017, as it has for years and years and years. And for 2018, it's still there. It wasn't repealed, as the House bill had promised. It survived the Senate bill and then survived the Joint Committee on Taxation, but they really pulled a lot of the teeth out of the AMT. Mm-hmm. The phase-out range now for the exemption goes all the way up to $1 million of income. So now it really is designed to hit the higher income people, and essentially the what they call the exemption amount, it's really an AMT standard deduction. That's almost $110,000 now. So I don't think we'll see much AMT in the future, but it does still exist.
Certainly exists for 2017. It seems to me that this is just another means of extracting more money from wealthy people.
Well, and in the 80s when the AMT was existed and where the thresholds were set, that was the target. But over time, as inflation incurs and numbers just get bigger, they didn't raise those exemption amounts nearly as fast as they should have. Hmm. And now it hits a lot of two-income families with, you know, more than a child or two. Yeah. You can almost bank on it.
We're starting to get some calls, and let's go to the phones now and bring in Zach calling from Chesterfield. Zach, thank you for being with us. You're on the air with Lance Weiss.
Hi. I was wondering if there is any risk of the Trump administration ending the earned income tax credit, possibly?
Well, it didn't make it into this bill, and as hard as it is for Congress to get anything else done, I think that particular credit is safe.
Okay, that's good to know. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling, Zach. I'm looking at a list here of various notes that I've made with regard to things that people can do. One of the things, again, I don't get, but that's not surprising, is to donate stock or property rather than cash.
Yeah. So, first of all the donations will help if you're itemizing your deductions. Mm-hmm. And the reason why it can make some sense to donate that stock would be if the stock is appreciated. So if you paid $1,000 for the stock and now it's worth $2,000, if you sell the stock, you have a gain and you have to pay tax on the gain, and then whatever's left, you can donate that to the charity. But by donating directly that appreciated stock to the charity, let them sell it. And because they're a charity, they don't have to pay tax on the gain, and you still get that full $2,000 deduction for the donation. So the donation of appreciated property gives you the full fair market value donation without having to pay tax on that increase. So anytime you have the opportunity and the charity is set up to receive that appreciated stock as a donation, it is a very smart play.
Well, let's continue on with the gifting theme for a moment here. We hear a lot on this radio station about donating cars, for instance.
Yes.
And a lot of organizations are asking people to do that.
I think there's a catchy tune on that one, isn't there?
Yeah, right. Cars for Kids is one of them. I think it's what you might be talking about. How does that work? If I have a car and I donate, how is it going to work on my taxes?
Well, if we go back about 8 or 10 years ago, you would donate the car and then make up a number that the value, you know, for the value of the car. And of course, everybody would pick the highest blue book value or highest retail value, sure, they could find, and then take that big donation. Well, the IRS kind of cracked down on that a little bit. And now what they require is that if the car has a value of bigger than $500, what they require the charity to do is within a period of time, and Don, Google knows how many days that is, if it's within 90 days or somewhere around there, the charity needs to tell you how much they sold the car for, and then that's the amount of your donation. Mm-hmm. So it cut down a lot on the inflated values on the donations, But again, you know, cars can sometimes be a little bit hard to sell. Mm-hmm. So it's just a way to make it easier, and then you do get the charitable donation for whatever the amount was that the charity ultimately sold the car for.
Well, another area in which I'm not totally clear is the idea of gifting kids, cash gifts to children. There is a limit on how much you can do, but I don't fully understand what the tax advantage of that is.
Well, again, it kind of goes back to that we can apply the same appreciated stock theory to kids as we can the charity. So if I have a stock that's gone up in value from $1,000 to $2,000 and I gift that to my children and let the kids sell it, well, that first $1,000 of gain is taxed at their zero bracket. Mm. So I can push some of that income tax liability down to their much lower bracket. But there's a thing out there called the kiddie tax that prevents that from being done really with any number over about $2,000. There's not a big benefit to the kiddie tax anymore, or because of the kiddie tax, to donate those appreciated securities. Where the donation to the kids really help isn't in our income tax regime, but it's in our estate tax regime, because I can gift up to $14,000 per year to anyone I want to give to, and then that wealth isn't included in the person's calculation of their death tax or their estate tax. Now, over the years, that estate tax exemption has grown to the point where not many people have a taxable estate. Mm. A married couple in 2017, if they passed away, their exemptions amount are almost $11 million between the two of them. It's like $10,890,000 or $9 something. So nearly $11 million is the estate tax floor, where you owe zero if you're married and you passed away sometime in 17. Well, part of the new tax bill here, beginning 1-1 of 2018, now that number is $10 million per spouse. So if you should really only be worried about the estate tax if your family wealth or those assets in your name are worth more than $10 million per spouse. So not many. Not many need to worry about the estate
certainly
tax.
Certainly not affecting my family. I know
that. It's a big number.
But yeah. here's a hypothetical on that. Suppose you have a child who wants to buy a house, and you give that child $10,000, gift that child $10,000 to use as a part of the down payment on the house. Is there a write-off there?
No, there's no tax deduction for the $10,000 for income tax. And then on the plus side, there's no income tax to pay for the child when they receive that $10,000. So it doesn't affect the income tax regime. If the family were in that very high wealth category, then it would affect their estate tax calculations. But again, not many have that $20 million number.
Right. But if I gave a child $10,000 for the house, I get no tax advantage, but they don't have to report it.
That's exactly right. Yes.
Okay. That's more easily understood now than it was a moment ago. Thank you. Mm-hmm. We have an email from Ron here who says, "What about increases of deduction for age? Does that make sense to you? I'm not
sure." Yeah, it does. So in 2017, if you were over age 65 or blind or both, then your standard deduction was increased. And again, Google's going to have that number. I think it was $600 per category. In 2018, under the new bill, those additional exemption amounts are gone. Those have been repealed.
Okay. So. Well, I hope that answers the question. Karen wants to know whether there are changes in filing status for the head of household. It's coming in just as I'm reading here. I thought it was great. Karen wants to know whether there are changes in filing status for the head of household versus single or married with the new tax.
Now, so again, that was one of the things they talked about eliminating in some of the early bills and some of the early proposals. But the filing status of head of household has survived the process. And that category of filer doesn't get quite the beneficial rates that a married filing joint person would get, but the rates are more friendly than the single rates. So head of household survived our rather cumbersome and clumsy law-creating process.
We're going to have to take a break in a moment here, but I'll just bring up something that we've talked about in the past, and maybe it's a little early to be real concerned about it, but that is the protecting of information. There have been so many cases in recent years of information being stolen and refunds being stolen by the hackers.
Yeah, that was on my list, Don. Guard against ID theft is certainly one of the items that's out there. And I would say as a firm, we saw fewer incidents of the identity theft in the tax season from, you know, 7-8 months ago than we have in years past. So it's gotten a little bit better, but it's still very much out there. And what we can do to guard against it is, you know, protect that Social Security number and be careful of the websites you go on to. And boy, if you're going to click a link and then start inputting personal information into that link, just make sure you trust that link.
Are people who file electronically more vulnerable?
I don't think so. I don't know that that really matters. Mm-hmm. The electronic filing system has been pretty robust.
Yeah, it's every year it gets
more and more filers, no doubt about it. And the refunds are so much faster when you electronically file.
Yeah. We're talking with Lance Weiss. He's a CPA and a partner with SFW Partners LLC. We'll be back to continue our conversation, if I can get my tongue untied. Continue our conversation, and of course we want to hear from you. If you have tax questions, issues that would relate to the end of the year, the deadline for 2017, give us a call, 382-8255, or send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you'd prefer to send a tweet, we take that at STL on air. Back with Lance Weiss in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back as we continue our conversation with CPA Lance Weiss. We're asking him for tax tips as we reach the end of the year, and you can take advantage of certain things out there to perhaps limit your tax liability for 2017. Another term here, Lance, that I'm not totally familiar with, but I know you are, it's to review your FSA amounts, your flexible spending account.
Yeah, that's one of those employer benefits that I mentioned earlier. So the flexible spending accounts generally work where maybe you have $10 a paycheck go into an account where you can use that account at any point during the year to buy things like prescription sunglasses or other type of medical-related items that aren't covered with the traditional health insurance, medical insurance. So that FSA balance, if it's not used within the specified period of time, it reverts back to the employer. So again, it's one of those things to sit down with your employer or HR department or whatever it might be and say, hey, do I have any money left in this FSA account? I want to be sure I get it spent. And, it would be for things like those prescription glasses or other copays or anything else like that that you need to be reimbursed for.
Another item on the list that I have is you can defer some income. But who wants to defer income?
Well, you know, and the traditional ways to defer income, again, is through that employer 401k plan. Okay. And, you know, the more you can put into that, the better is the way I look at it, because we get that deduction in these years where we're earning, and almost for everyone, at a higher income tax rate than we will be in when we're in our 70s and 80s and withdrawing those mm-hmm. funds. So to defer the income, the best route there is with that 401k plan. Now, we don't have much time left, but there is still time to do things like the traditional IRA. So you put money into the IRA, mm-hmm. and it really is income deferral. I'm going to take some of my income, put it in this account, and when I pull it out years from now, I'll owe tax on it, but for most people, they'll be in a lower bracket when they pull it out.
And if you're due for a bonus, I suppose you could ask your employer to defer it until 2018.
Well, so bonus deferrals fall into a whole nother realm of, you know, what else have I done here to defer the bonus? Mm-hmm. And in the most egregious cases, that created really something like an Enron, where they deferred all these bonuses and then hurried up and pulled them out right before the ship sank. So mm-hmm. those type of large bonus deferrals, be sure to get HR and probably even an attorney involved, a little bit beyond the scope of what most people see. But the best deferrals out there are still these 401ks and IRAs.
Okay, back to the phones. We've got Hilda calling us, and she has a question or comment. Let's put her on the air. Go ahead, Hilda.
Hi. I wanted to comment on the donor advised funds and to make people aware that there is a St. Louis Community Foundation that accepts donors' advised funds, and then you can make that, as your guest said, you can make that, set up that account with them in 2017, and then make the donations in 2018 to the charities that you select.
Yeah, that's absolutely fantastic. And, mm-hmm. and it used to be only the – I mean, we remember here in St. Louis, we have the Current Water Foundation, we have the Marshall Faulk Foundation, the Pujols Foundation, and it used to be a tax benefit that was really reserved for those high-income folks who would have, you know, large income events in their earning years. But now through these donor-advised funds, and this is a great one that's out there, and again, some of the other ones with the brokerage accounts and money managers that anyone could take advantage of. So great call. Thank you.
The new tax bill, what happens with charitable donations under that?
Well, so charitable donations are all still good.
Yeah.
So and the only change there was that traditionally the maximum you could put in and deduct in any given year was 50% of your income. I don't know many people who would hit that 50% of their mm-hmm. income as a donation. But now that's been increased to 60% of their income. So that's a little bit of a tweak that mm-hmm. doesn't have much impact on anyone. The bigger impact on charitables is that you needed to itemize your deductions to take advantage of the mm-hmm. charitable donation. And now that the standard deduction is up to $24,000 for 2018 and later tax years, it's going to be harder for a lot of people to itemize. Mm-hmm. So that's really the bigger impact there, and it could have a trickle-down impact on a lot of the charities.
Let's take another call. William joins us from West County. William, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Great show. I'd like to know if the Trump administration is going to drop that backdoor IRA plan or idea.
So the backdoor IRA plan wasn't dropped, but maybe first I should talk a little bit about what that is.
Yeah.
And what the – it's really it's a IRA conversion strategy where you take balances that are in your regular IRAs and you convert those into Roth IRAs. And that opportunity is still there, but it has been tweaked and it's a little bit tougher to do now in that in the old days you could do that conversion of your regular IRA to a Roth IRA and then you had until you filed your tax return to maybe reconvert it for any – reason you might want to reconvert it. And what they've taken away from us as part of this new bill is the ability to do that recharacterization. So again, it's a minor tweak for only those who were taking advantage of it, so it doesn't have a real broad implication. But for those who were taking advantage of that Roth characterization, you know, Roth conversion and then recharacterization, mm-hmm. no more recharacterizations, in about 10, 11 more days, no more ability to do those.
Thanks for the call, William. Let's go to Linda calling from Waterloo. Linda, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I love you guys' show. I have a couple of questions. This year I won $500,000, and I was wondering if you guys had any tips or tricks other than maxing out your 401k that'll help me. And in the new tax bill, is the casino win-loss, was that still in the revised copy that they were taking away the casino win loss.
Okay, so congratulations. That's an awesome. Hopefully, there weren't 600,000 of losses to go along with that 500,000 win.
I wonder if you'd consider adopting it.
Yeah, and great idea to max out the 401k. And you know, and as we've mentioned, one of the other callers called in. The donor advised fund might be this could be the best year to set that up if that's any part of your long term strategy. And then the changes that occurred with regard to the casino winnings in some respects have been a little bit more generous. So before you could only deduct your actual wagering and gambling losses, where now what they let you deduct against your gambling income are all of the other expenses. So ATM fees and then whatever other gaming fees you might have incurred to incur those transactions. So a little bit more is deducted against the income. There's still so much more to come. The bill was just signed. So mm-hmm. we have technical corrections to come. We have lots of commentary yet to come out. But it looks like the casino industry got a little bit in there and that now more of those deductions are allowable.
At what point do the casinos have to report your winnings and the amount of your winnings?
You know, Don, I don't know that threshold on right on top of my head. It's a 1099-G or a W-2-G, I think, actually, that the casinos uh-huh. pay. I don't think it's $1, but they do pay out – they do show a lot of information on those W-2-Gs.
Right. Back to the phones. Sean is joining us from near Rolla. Go ahead, Sean.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. My question is in regards to Airbnb. I'm an Airbnb host. I've done it for 2 years. Last year, my tax preparer was a bit befuddled on how to handle my Airbnb income and how to tax it, etc. And I was told that this year I can deduct quite a few things, cleaning supplies, labor, etc., for running my Airbnb. And I also need to add that I do live in the residence as a primary residence, which changes the taxes a little bit from what I hear. Interested in your input.
Okay, so on the labor side of it, it's only going to be labor that you actually pay. You can't deduct any cost related to your own labor because then it would have to be income to you on the other side. So it'll just be, you know, those cleaning fees that you paid to a third party, those would be deductible against it. So, and then the other thing on the Airbnbs, and it's probably a little bit too much to get into today, but it'll depend on what's the average length of stay in the Airbnb. And it could be more like a bread and breakfast business type item where I know there's not a breakfast involved, but if the average stay is short enough, typically less than 7 days, then Sean, what you're going to need to do is report that on a Schedule C of your tax return. Where if it looks more like a longer term rental, then it's a Schedule E on your tax return. So we'd have to look at, is this a trade or business, or is it more of a rental operation? And there's some more specific facts that you know, you can call me off air, or we could shoot some emails back and forth. But there are – it's easy to see why your preparer last year was a little bit befuddled. The rules are confusing.
Thank you for the call. You know, it seems to me that it'd be pretty hard for the good Uncle Sam to keep track of Airbnb income.
Well, the Airbnb, anything that's paid PayPal or with a credit card, the IRS has all of that information on there with all of their electronic transfers that are done. But, you know, the Airbnb is also pretty similar to something we see a lot of, and those are the GoFundMe pages. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, if you donate to that GoFundMe page because you see the story on there that tugs at your heart and you send that person $10 or $100, very, very rarely will that be a charitable donation. Mm-hmm. And you can't deduct that. It can be a non-taxable gift to that person because there's no quid pro quo. You receive nothing back, mm-hmm. but you haven't made a donation to a qualified organization. So Airbnbs, GoFundMe, PayPals, the IRS has access to all of that information, and it's just a matter of, you know, how efficiently can they pull it down and use it.
Big brother lives. Big brother lives.
Kevin
is joining us from Afton. Kevin, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Yeah, you had mentioned about putting money into an IRA as a method of deferred income. That can still be put in up until tax filing date, in other words, April 17th of next year. For tax year 2017, right?
Yeah, that is exactly right. We still, even under the new bill, they've let us keep that later due date advantage. So, yes, thanks for pointing that out.
Thank you.
Kevin, thank you for the call. Let's go to Matt. Matt, thank you for waiting. You're on the air with Lance Weiss.
I had a couple of points. One, these are both about exemptions and deductions, what's been added and taken away. For an average family of four, you'd have one for the wife, one for the husband, an exemption for the wife, an exemption for the husband, and for each of, say, two children. That's $16,200. And under the 2017 law, you have $6,000 in standard deduction for each the husband and the wife. That's a total of $28,200. As of 2018, there are no exemptions. It wipes that $16,200 off. And all you get are $12,000 each for the husband and wife. That's $24,000 compared to $28,200.
Yeah.
Number two, there's very little been made of the fact of the loss of those exemptions. Off the top of your income, when you start to figure what's taxable, this year you've got $4,050 in the exemption and $6,350 in the standard deduction. That's $10,400. This year coming in, you've got next year coming in, you've got $12,000 in an expanded standard deduction. The actual discount, the actual removal of income to reach taxable income is not $6,000 added deduction. it's $1,600 per person.
Yeah.
Okay? And lastly, I believe the bump up for the standard deduction previously, for say 2017, was $1,550, not $600. And I've seen contradictory reports. I don't know the final form, but some of the reports about the tax law, the new one, say that that bump up is going to be carried so that your $12,000 gets at least $1,300 added to it. But that may have disappeared in the last day or two. Thank you very much.
Yeah, the caller makes good points in that the personal exemptions are gone. Mm-hmm. So for that family of four, they are going to go from $28,200 down to $24,000. But on the other side, it was the add back of those exemption amounts that often caused that dreaded AMT monster. Mm-hmm. Well, now with the exemptions not being there, so they're not added back, there will be some AMT savings. So a lot of those families and even the larger families who are almost automatically in AMT every year, they won't have that additional AMT tax every year. So it's real hard to try to do any sort of a projection on the back of a piece of paper. The software is just absolutely key, and it's still catching up. And as the caller pointed out, some things were rushed in there in the last week or so that caused these, changes, and they had to get one more yes vote, to make it all happen. Yeah. I'm pretty sure, though, that the additional exemptions for over 65 and blind did not make it into the final bill, and I'll try to check that during the next break.
I'm glad you didn't ask me to repeat what he said there. And I'm glad that you were able to follow all of that. That gets pretty confusing at times. Another caller, Dennis in Baldwin. You're on the air with Lance Weiss. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Hey, he just got me more confused. I'm sorry. But if you could just make this real basic again, do you call a dependent deduction an exemption?
Yes.
In other words, so here. You got a married couple, the husband, wife, joint return. They have two exemptions, correct?
Well, they would actually have four exemptions because they get one for the husband, one for the wife, and then one for each kid. So that would be the 16,000
no,
of exemptions.
No, I don't have any kids.
Oh, okay. Yes.
No,
yeah.
No
yep.
kids. Okay.
Yep.
So,
no kids.
And how much did that change from 17 to 18 for the exemption only?
So the exemptions only amount were $4,000 apiece. So between the two of you would have been a little over $8,000. Now that's zero. That's gone to zero.
Oh, that's what this man just meant before.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so you're –
However,
so
the
you're,
amount
you're, –
I'm sorry. The amount then for the – you mentioned about $20,000, I believe it was, as far as just taking a standard deduction versus itemizing.
Yeah, so your total deductions on your 17 return, again, assuming you don't itemize, were 8 for the exemptions and 12 for the standard, so a 20 total. You're in 18, your total is going to be 24 because the standard deduction amount doubled up to $24,000.
Whoa. All right, I'm with you now. Okay. Great. Hey, I appreciate it.
Yep. My pleasure.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much for the call, Dennis. Our time is winding down, Lance. Any final thought you want to leave folks with in 30 seconds or so?
Well, final thoughts. Goodwill. We didn't talk a lot about the property donations, mm-hmm. but the things we can do here near the end of the year, almost right on top of the end of the year, is gather up all those belongings. Because in 17, again, more people itemize. We can look at I think it's satruck.org or .com mm-hmm. that has the real good list of what yeah. these values are. But all the property donations, charitable donations, things like that you can do to reduce your income in 17, let's take advantage of those.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being with us. A lot of questions as the year winds down. Lance Weiss, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis On the Air is produced by Alex Hoyer and Laura Hamden with production assistance from Aaron Dorr, Spencer Reed, and Char Dastin. Executive producer is Mary Edwards. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hope you have a wonderful holiday, everybody. Thanks for listening. I'm Don Marsh.